Product marketing is empathy and clarity. So we connect with our audience. We understand who our audience is and what their needs are, jobs to be done, all of that. That's empathy. So it's a deep understanding of who we're going at. Clarity is then everything else that allows the choice for that audience to become really, really obvious. So Google talks about know the user, know the magic, connect the two. That's really what product marketing should be doing. It's empathy and clarity. Yeah.
Hello, hello again, and welcome back to Product Marketing Life. I'm your host, Sid Catan, Senior Product Marketing Manager at Beekeeper by Lumapps. And today I'm joined by Manish Joshi. He's the VP of Product and Commercial Marketing at Transcarent. And I'm super excited to have you here. Manish, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Sid. Super excited to be here as well. So I serve as the Vice President of Product and Commercial Marketing at Transcarent, as you mentioned. Grew up in Michigan, lived in, worked in the Detroit, Chicago, Minneapolis areas of the Midwest, spent my career in healthcare. I moved out to the San Francisco Bay Area about 7 years ago, pre-pandemic, to get into the startup scene a little bit as well. It's been a wild ride and kind of found myself as an accidental marketer that I'm happy to dive into a little bit deeper as we go. And I've enjoyed it ever since.
So a lot of accidental marketers out there, and I wonder why. I'm curious to know, like, what do you like to do for fun?
Yeah, so I am I'm married to a product manager, so I've gotten some good learnings from her from that perspective. And then she and I have a almost 3-year-old toddler who's hilarious and loves to keep us on our toes. So just, you know, trying to find a way to take them to the park, play with them, things like that.
Wow, you took like the thing about being close to your product manager really, really seriously,
yeah.
It looks like.
Yeah, for sure.
Very cool. So, I mean, maybe an easy one for you to answer, but what's a non-marketing skill or habit that's made you better at your job?
Sure. Yeah, it's a good question. I love to say, I don't know where I got this from a long time ago, but have a strong point of view that's loosely held. And so doing that almost feels like a cheat code when you're talking about how to influence others without authority. You already have a frame of reference, a way of thinking about something going into it with that strong point of view. So as you get new information, as you have more conversations, you're able to put that in context of your current point of view and see if that makes sense with everything else that's being said. And do that by having that strong point of view loosely held so that you can actually make changes and update that as it goes and you're not just forcing your opinion down others' throats. That's been great. I think obviously put that in context of understanding the business deeply as well. I find a lot of marketers sometimes are very focused on our own metrics, on our own measurements of success. And so if we're not leading to revenue or engagement or operational improvements or whatever it happens to be, just deeply understanding your own business model paired with that strong point of view will allow you to be able to kind of open up your aperture to what you're looking to, you know, do better for the company.
I love that. We had a conversation about this previously, I think with Hannah, and we talked about how it's like becomes your signature too, right? Because then when you're in the meeting, people can know and learn to expect that, you know, Manish is going to come to this meeting with a point of view, and it becomes your signature too. So I really like that. So earlier you mentioned you're an accidental marketer. Would love to hear your journey from where you started all the way to now Transcarent.
Sure. Yeah. So I've been in the healthcare industry for about 15 years or so now. I started out in the nonprofit world as an AmeriCorps member, and I was helping families who didn't have the right insurance coverage. And from there, moved into operations consulting for hospitals and product strategy, corporate strategy for large health insurance companies. And I thought that's where I wanted to go for the rest of my career, was in operations strategy within the health insurance and health provider, hospital type of industry. Maybe see myself as a hospital COO in the future or a general manager at a health plan. So with that ambition, went to business school, did an MBA. And while I was there, I really just thought, you know what? I do actually want to get closer to the patient and their needs. And there's a lot of new products out there that are going to help them get the care that they need, get better, get healthier more quickly. And I want to be a part of that. And so I've joined Medtronic out of business school, which is a very large medical device company, in a rotational program that they offered at the time. And so that I thought would give me a really great opportunity to try out different things and grow that type of a career over time. And I intentionally picked what they called a downstream marketing rotation for my first position, typical outbound product marketing type of role that we might consider. That was my first formal entry into marketing. And I did that intentionally because I thought, I need to learn how to launch products if I'm going to stick around here and grow that career. I was fortunate to join this smaller business unit of a company that they had acquired a few years back. So I got to wear a bunch of different hats while I was there, strategy and operations and all the things I'd done before, but in addition to just kind of developing our go-to-market. And so I was there for a few years before my wife and I decided to move to the Bay Area and do that for both of our own family reasons and personal reasons there. And so at that point, it was pre-pandemic, not a lot of remote opportunities. And joined at the time my first startup. And so that was a company called Omada Health. They were Series C when I joined. They're now public, worth over $1 billion. And I was their first product marketer. Kind of lucky in the sense that they had an opening, was on their website, hit apply, and was somehow able to get through from that perspective. That company, as their first product marketer, they were going from dominating in a single product category for about 7 or 8 years, being first to market, and then now looking to expand into a multi-product portfolio, which is a very different motion, not just for go-to-market, but just how do you do work within the company? You can be all hands on deck when it's a single product that you have. You can't do that when you need to prioritize between multiple products. And so that was a really great experience that I had for a few years there. But I had this nagging feeling that I wanted to go earlier stage, build out product marketing the way that I thought maybe I could have a better influence of if I was earlier, and take all of that healthcare experience and do something that was more, I guess, able to fix the frustrations that I anticipated going into every healthcare experience that I had and then receiving it as well. I always expected frustration and then had it as well. So that's what Transcarent does. I've been there for 4 years. We sell into the HR departments and finance departments of large companies and provide better benefits for people across a number of different healthcare categories. Been there for about 4 years, started as their first product marketer when we had about 50 people and we're just about 6 months out of stealth mode. And now we're about 2,500 people and going strong with several Fortune 10 companies. And I serve as their VP of product and commercial marketing.
Wow, what a journey. And it sounds like you've been on the ride for, like you said, 50 to 2,500. Was that correct?
Yeah.
Wow, that's wild. And I really like, I don't think I've talked to too many people that came from that, you know, strategy and consulting background. So it's a really cool place to have began. And then now you're here. I don't see many people that are product and commercial marketing as their role. Like, can you give me an idea of what that means to have both?
Yeah. So the commercial marketing side for us has shifted over time too, because as you grow, you should, you know, adapt what areas you're focused on and what you're not focused on. There's this really great article that came out years ago from First Round Capital that I subscribe to that is give away your Legos. So if you're in this growth stage environment, you should take things on, but you should also give them up and take on new things as the company is growing and scaling so that you can do new things as well. So within that commercial marketing function, I've had a few different hats. It's included proposal management. It's included sales enablement, demand generation, marketing operations, and a handful of other areas. Think about it as just essentially the B2B marketing function that's selling into those buyers. And we're a B2B2C company because at the end of the day, the employees of our companies that we sell into are then using our products and services.
Yeah. I really like that saying, because as product marketers, I feel like there's this tendency to hold on to everything. What not to put you on the spot, but what Legos did you have to get rid of?
Well, it was taking them on at first, right? It was just product marketing at the time. And so we expanded by taking on the commercial marketing side, which at the beginning was proposal management, sales enablement, and marketing operations. And then I had a great colleague who joined who had a ton of experience in proposal management. So after we made some updates, we said, hey, this actually fits better under your part of the house, and we should go focus on some other things. Same with marketing operations and a handful of the other areas.
Very cool. Okay. Yeah. So you're at Transcarent today. What keeps you excited about the mission, about your role? What's next? And yeah, I guess what are you doing now even?
Yeah. So keeps me excited is obviously just the ability for us to provide new, better ways of different ways of experiencing healthcare. It's a really complex industry, but it doesn't have to be. And so the fact that we're able to eat that complexity for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then give people a better experience is something that we're super interested in. So the most exciting thing that I'll say that we've been able to do in recent time is launch and then have commercial and consumer success with a new way of understanding what benefits you have available to you and then when and how to use them. It's through AI. AI is a tool. It's not the thing that I'm excited about particularly in saying, oh, we have this AI thing, but rather than knowing your exact destination right up front and having to say, oh, I need this specific surgery with the specific type of doctor at the specific place. I know exactly how much it's going to cost me. You can just open up an app 24 hours a day, type in my shoulder hurts, and start getting the actual information that you need to find the answers and take the next step and get care.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Wow, you're actually making healthcare seem simple. I love it.
Try it.
So during our first call, you said something that I really loved, which is marketing is innovation. Marketing is one of the core drivers of innovation. What does that look like in practice? What is kind of the foundation with which you've made this? What you said earlier was, I'm blanking now. Yeah, strong beliefs loosely held, right?
Yeah. It's an interesting take. I mean, I don't think it's like that much of a hot take, but typically folks think of innovation as your R&D center, right? Product engineering, design, all of those that are creating new products and tools and getting that out into the world. And marketing is finding a way to talk about it and getting it off the shelf. And I'm not a fan of the product puts it on the shelf and marketing takes it off the shelf because, you know, if you build it, they will come, just isn't true. As we all know, distribution plans need to be the right place. You've got to know what your buyers want and actually build something for them. So this is not by any means stepping on product or engineering or design or operations or anyone else's toes. It's more just that marketing actually has a really great seat at the table to drive innovation, whether you realize it or not. And so a lot of folks, particularly within product marketing, will say, you know, how do you actually earn your seat at the table? Fortunately, a lot of companies, you're getting that seat at the table, or there's an implied assumed seat at the table for you. And it's more about your job of keeping that seat at the table. And so going back to that strong point of view loosely held, innovation can come from a number of different places within the company, but who's best suited to actually stitch all of that together? And who has the information of what does the market look like? What is the requirements of that market and those specific customers within it that we want to go after? How are we distinctly set up to succeed better than any competitive alternatives out there or status quo ways for that buyer to do the job that we are hoping that they hire us for? That all of that and beyond is coming from product marketing. How much should we charge them? How much should we, you know, deliver value from that perspective? And you're not doing it in a silo, but you are that chief cat herder for your company to be able to deliver that point of view and get people to create that answer of what's going to actually help you grow. And so innovation, just building it, but not actually getting it in the hands of people who need it and get value from it, isn't really innovation. So that's where marketing can really drive that innovation forward.
Yeah. And in terms of like what it looks like in practice, could you share some of your tales in the trenches of like what this looks like coming to life?
Yeah, a couple of them. So, I mean, I joined that first startup I mentioned. It was as a product marketing manager. That was my title. I was the first person in that function. Didn't have like a VP, CMO, anything like that, that was directly over me who had a specific product marketing task. I was reporting into a great leader who was in charge of all B2B marketing. And so we had a small team. There was people focused on demand gen, on partner marketing, on others, and I was the sole product marketer, at least in the beginning. That didn't stop me or others from being able to drive innovation forward from the marketing side. And as an example, that company had a partnership with a very large company. It was a Fortune 500 company, a hardware device for people who have diabetes. You can read your sugar levels easily just by wearing a sensor, a continuous glucose monitor, rather than having to prick your finger multiple times a day. And a lot of companies were just ingesting the data for people who actually were wearing those sensors all the time and then saying, great, we'll coach you on that those insights and do more with it. This is a newer partnership for us. We then received the typical, oh, we're going to launch this thing. It's a CEO level priority with a similar product strategy to what all of our competition was doing. And so I thought, I don't know if this is actually going to sell for us. And if anything, due to just complex insurance rules of who gets coverage to even use this device, when we'll get the data, all sorts of other things, it might actually make selling our product even harder and fragment who's available to get it from us. And just rather than sitting on that, I thought, let me talk to sales. Let me talk to business development. Let me talk to our head of product and others who have put this product strategy forward and see if we can't write something new as our product strategy going forward. So a couple weeks later, we actually decided, yes, we do need to do something different here. And instead of just taking the data from a partner, if the data existed, we actually gave away those devices, a couple of those devices, as a component of our service offering to our users. And so that was baked in to be financially viable for us, for our partners, for our clients, for the users themselves. And it gave our product a unique advantage against the rest of the market, because now we were making sure that we were getting that data and insight from everyone who was using our product, not just a handful of people. And so truly actually rewriting the product strategy was the first example for that. Another one before then, working at Medtronic, we were looking to launch a new patient engagement app or just a user app. We say, okay, great, I'll launch an app and people will use it. But in our space, we were working with people who had five or more chronic conditions. Average age of the patients who were using our service were in their late 70s. And so we didn't want to just launch an app and say, hopefully people would use it. We needed to make sure truly that they could use it, saw the need to use it, got value out of it instantly so that their health actually gets better too. Because if they're not using it, then, you know, it's not just a low engagement, but we also see lower health outcomes. And so there's, you know, a double set of importance here to make sure we get it right. So with that in mind, we actually set up a beta pilot with a large academic medical center and wanted to make sure that from an innovation perspective that we were actually delivering a product that would get used. So we got feedback from the nurses who were going to be on site working with these patients. We went down there, we trained them, I, you know, got their feedback. I scheduled the beta program so that I'd be there after the few week period and collect their insights in person. It wasn't just a phone call or a Zoom setup. You flew over there. We got daily insights from the patients who were using the service from us. We made sure to embed, you know, Qualtrics or whatever it was in the app and make sure that, or in the tablet, and make sure that they could get that back to us on a daily basis, really easily use those insights to then tweak the product offering to the level of, hey, the keyboard looks different on different screens through the app when you have to type into the field and it's blocking parts of the screen and it's hard to read and see. And we've got a 93-year-old who's using this app in our solution set as well. How can we make this really easy for them to use as well? And so sitting there screen by screen with our product manager and saying, how do we make this consistent across the board? That was using the market insights that we had from that product and planning it ahead of time to know that we know there's going to be some learnings in here. So we scheduled that beta program before our GA release or general availability release, had a couple of sprint cycles that we could actually make those changes in beforehand, and then got that information back to those, that beta customer as well, to that academic medical center, and said, you, your staff, and your patients gave us great feedback. here's what we're doing with it. Here's what's went gone live already, what will go live in the future. He said, great, sign me up, give me a full contract. And so even the day after launch, we had them and a handful of others coming through to sign up with larger contract values than we typically see. And then the last one I'll give for now is that AI solution that I was talking about at Transcarent. So we launched this solution in probably about 17 days. And in the beginning, we weren't sure how we would do it. CEO comes to us and says, our engineering team, product team is doing a great job. Early insights on this new AI capability. So instead of having to wait on hold with a call center to figure out, what's my deductible? Is this procedure covered? Was this doctor covered? You know, how much is it going to cost me? Where should I go for care? All of these types of questions in healthcare, typically you have to read a billion PDFs. You have to call someone, hope you get an answer that makes sense. You get things in the mail that says this is not a bill, but you don't actually know what it actually is. And so you're like, okay, AI can solve for this. And they had early pieces of it put together, but not a fully built product yet. We knew that they would build it out over time. We've got long sales cycles that are about 12 months in length. We thought there's no way somebody's going to buy this from us right now in this year. Our CEO, as many founders do, said, no, let's launch this soon. And so we put together a plan, working with product management, solutions management, and others. And 17 days later, we launched this new solution that was very differentiated from the market. We were first to market. We were able to capitalize on that very quickly and developed $60 million in pipeline in 60 days and landed nearly $250,000 users that were available to use that through large companies just within 7 months. So in half the time it usually takes to sell and then implement into these customers, we were able to get that right off the bat from the first launch, inclusive of a very, very large client in the Fortune 10 as well, that did some user testing for us, made sure that this was working to the level that they use as well and going forward. So from that perspective, you could say, well, okay, you did a launch in a very short period of time. Is that really innovation? Or did you just like go through and check the box of all the things you need to get done for that launch? And so the way that was actually driving innovation forward was taking the innovation that was developed already, this new product that was coming through and going through our product development process, but then framing it for the market in a way that not only resonated for them and created the obvious choice for them to say, yes, this is something I should be doing. This is something I should be doing now. It's something I should be doing with you. But then also shape the direction of the other features that we would be building on top of it, because that has worked in the market. And so that then framed the rest of the roadmap going forward without us having to be in meetings or ask for roadmap access and things like that. They already saw the success of it in the market and said, okay, we should be going in this direction.
Yeah. Wow. That's fascinating, because like we're talking about AI in healthcare in a very regulated space, being able to deliver fast. And I think early access has got to be /beta is like actually one of the most underappreciated areas where I think product marketing can have a big impact and also build partnership with product managers, also drive innovation. So when it comes to doing that, I guess, like, how do you go about it in terms of making sure that product management, other stakeholders understand that this is the seat that product marketers should sit on?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, I mean, this was my first marketing role that I had. I was probably a year and a half into it when I did that beta program, that early access program. So we were thinking about, okay, we're going to launch this product. We need some market feedback. Maybe we can do a pilot with someone, some early access. And instead of just waiting for that to happen, I got scrappy, Googled, talked to folks, like figured it out and said, what do we actually want to occur? What's the outcome that's going to occur from all of this? And my manager at the time kind of drilled that into our heads. It was really great from the perspective of, okay, you did all of this work. So what? What's the next step that's coming of it? And honestly, the last mile of the work that you do, many times is the most important, but it's the most overlooked because you're already so in the weeds on everything else that you've developed and created and built to get to that point. We almost forget that if I really want this to be of value, I need to package it up in a way and have my next steps delivered so that when I get, you know, user insight, when I get the salesperson to use this in the field, I have a feedback loop. I have, you know, next steps for them to do all of those things. So just created a document. Honestly, that was it. That said, what do we actually need to incur for here? How many people do we want in this early access program? What are we going to ask the client for? How do we move this from pilot stage to actually full-blown contract? And then talked to others who had more experience than me. I mean, I talked to legal to say, what are we allowed to do here? Do I have to charge them? Do I not? Are there limits on the number of devices that we're able to give away? We had hardware and software and services, all of those involved. And through that process, coming to the meeting or just stopping by someone's desk to say, hey, I'm working on this. What do you think? That's not just getting your seat at the table. That's keeping it. And I'm saying, like, pull you closer to them and say, why don't you go sit closer to the head over there so that we make sure that we're getting all of your insights built in.
I love that. I was smiling because I think that's the right way to do it. Especially when I love that you said the last mile problem, because I think we live in a time where, you know, there's all these abstract frameworks that people love to show, but brass tacks, it's often the simplest things, right? Often people are like, hey, here's my, I hate to say this example, but here's my resume. Can you forward this to people? But there needs to be a very clear next step. What is the blurb you want me to send? Who are the people you want to talk to? It is that last mile of what is the action you want me to take? And I think especially today, because it's almost you want to put people at cognitive ease. No one has the time to think through that last mile for you. So if you do it for them, becomes very easy to action on, even if you don't have groundbreaking insights. Even if you have one or two good ideas that actually have a next step attached to it, then it really sets you apart.
Yeah. It also just makes it easier for yourself. I mean, we're always inundated with more work than we have the capacity to deliver on, but why add to it? You did all this work to get to a launch or a release or some update and a campaign, whatever it happens to be. And then all of a sudden you get onto the next project, you go back, oh, what am I supposed to do next? Now I have this thing and someone's asking for an update, or I don't know what to do here. And I didn't get the results I wanted. Just think through the next 3 days that are going to come out of it at least, and set yourself up for success further that way. Make it easier on your future self.
Yeah, I like that. It takes you out of reactive mode as well. And then you kind of control the narrative. Like you said, you control, or you have at least predicted or prepared for the outcome. Kind of related is for these types of, I guess, launches or even just overall programs, it sounds like that you've handled. How do you prepare yourself and your team to execute on this level of stuff? You shared some of it, but
yeah,
wondering if you can even go deeper into that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's an evolution. For sure. I think the best one that I'm circling on now is you want to show what good looks like and give an example, or at least set an expectation for what the bar should be. But it's more probably about setting your team up for an understanding of what that outcome needs to be or what it needs to be around, and then by when that should occur, or at least roughly speaking, and then let them fill in the gaps from that, and then just make sure you're staying close enough, allow them to time box work, give you really draft thinking so that, you know, you're not 80% of the way there. And even if you get feedback, you don't have time or ability to change it, and it's only 20%. So you can change the direction going forward. What I found otherwise is that one of two things might happen. So if you're too overly prescriptive, nobody likes to be micromanaged, you're going to have the soul sucked out of the work that you do, especially in product marketing, that, you know, that creative aspect really needs to come forward. And we're strategic people. We want to know what it is that we're trying to accomplish, how this fits into the mission of the business, how I can actually develop, know what needs to happen, develop, use my relationships across the country to do things versus just saying go make this deck, launch it here, use it here, et cetera. So don't micromanage. That's one side of it where you then, you know, don't burn out your people. The other is if it's too open-ended, then, you know, you're going to go through way too many repetitions and iterations of the work and get all this feedback that might not make sense to you. And so provide enough context on what the end state is. And I didn't mention it, but another piece might be like, how do you actually get to that end state? Where are there some milestones or people within the organization that you need to talk to? What is important to them? Set them up for success and let them fill in the gaps in between. And that's really where you're going to see the best type of work coming out.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, having the best type of work come out, I'm curious, like, for other PMMs that want a seat at this innovation table, that are wanting to build their influence, let's say, even at a more junior level, sure, what advice would you give them, like, if you had to give them a plan of attack? How should they think about it?
Yeah. So, I mean, part of the reason why I love our team that we have right now in product marketing and commercial marketing together that you don't always see, as you mentioned, is because it is the actual integration of the two. And so none of the work that we should do is an academic exercise. It's either practical and useful for your business, or it's, you know, arts and crafts. And from that perspective, you should be thinking about, how am I actually going to make this? I mean, I think I'm on a soapbox with this. Successful. What does success even mean? Not understanding that. And product marketing, many times we talk about, oh, we're misunderstood and we don't actually like get the value from others. They don't understand our purpose here. Maybe we should sit in product or marketing or straight to the CEO. And I kind of think some of that is noise. And we're product marketers. We should be able to say the value prop for things, maybe including what we do as well. And we should be able to talk to different audiences, including internal audiences like sales leaders, like sellers, like product, like ops, like CEOs and others, and be able to tailor our message accordingly. And so what I would say is at any level, I've done some of this at PMM, senior PMM director, senior director of VP, didn't really matter, showing up with, again, that point of view, which can be wrong. It's totally okay. Being okay with being wrong, not being afraid about that, putting forward your opinion with your rationale for what you're thinking. That's the step that's starting. That's the first step right there. So how do you actually tangibly take that forward? Think about who else needs to be involved to get whatever you're doing to market, to make it a success. So you've already thought about what success actually means. Go work with the other people to take it forward. Instead of saying like, I don't know, it's not my job. I don't actually know what my job is or where I should start, and start, just start with it. And then your manager, others will say like, actually, we can help you with this. You don't have to do all of those pieces of it. You shouldn't just take it all on, but you'll figure that out as you go. And you get enough repetitions, that'll just kind of become muscle memory from that perspective. And so if you're co-creating this with stakeholders across the business, it's going to be a lot easier for them to take it forward for you as well. So if you've got a new launch that you're coming through, work on that pitch with some really great sellers on your team that are influential. Bring product into it earlier. Make sure that they have a voice in this and how their product that they're building is actually going to be represented in the market. And then think about, how does your messaging document or positioning guide or whatever it happens to be actually inform the demand generation campaigns? Who are the target market personas that you want to go after? Have you mapped the right accounts and their buying committee members and the role of those buying committee members, and worked with them to do that? If you do that on just a handful of things, you'll start to see the value of what you're delivering, instead of being frustrated by saying, I did all of this work and it just sat on a shelf and no one ever used it, or we didn't need to launch this product or whatever it happens to be. That I think is, regardless of the level, the journey of how you can actually see the value of your work.
I love it. I love it. Manish, this has been an awesome conversation. As I always do, I like to ask a few final questions.
Sure.
The first one is, product marketing is blank. Can you fill in the blank?
Yeah. Product marketing is empathy and clarity. So we connect with our audience. We understand who our audience is and what their needs are, jobs to be done, all of that. That's empathy. So it's a deep understanding of who we're going after. Clarity is then everything else that allows the choice for that audience to become really, really obvious. So Google talks about know the user, know the magic, connect the two. And that's really what product marketing should be doing. It's empathy and clarity together.
Nice. And speaking of a next step and having a clearly defined one, how can people learn more about you and what you're up to?
Sure. Yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn. So it's just my first name is my profile URL. You can find me there. And I'll usually be around. If you have any questions, you want to talk shop or anything like that, please feel free to reach out. I love connecting with other marketers or product marketers.
Awesome. And you've been in the PMA circuit, so Hopefully I can find you there as well. Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you so much. Been a great conversation.
You too. Likewise. Thanks, Sid.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.